So here's the million-dollar question. How are men like us who work hard, have good motives, and a God-given purpose supposed to fulfill the calling on our lives and the dreams in our hearts, all while establishing sexual integrity, thriving relationships, and a meaningful connection with God? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Sathya Sam. Welcome to Unleash the Man Within. Hey, what's up, my man? It's Sathya Sam here. Welcome back to Unleash the Man Within. We're donning a new segment here. We're a couple episodes in, and I got my man Sean Bonito joining here today. Sean, welcome back.
Yeah, great to be here, man.
Yeah, it was fun doing the first round, and I was in Jamaica still when we did the last round.
Yeah, so it's nice, right.
Nice to be back in Canada. Sean, what's new and exciting in your world, man?
New and exciting. Well, what's new is I'm sitting down today because I got a sore knee, so figuring all that out right now. But what's exciting, man?
What happened with your knee again?
I still haven't been able to go get a definite answer. So waiting for that, but we'll see. Okay. We'll see if that's getting better in the next month or so. But what's exciting, man? Yeah.
Sorry, but what were you playing sports? Or I forget now.
I was pushing Violet on the swing, and I turned to like run ahead of it really quickly so she could kick me in the butt. And didn't end so well. I felt this like sharp pain in my knee, which I've never felt before. So I was like, right? Like, oh man, once you're a dad of two and apparently when you go over 30 or so, you start breaking down. And I don't buy into that, but hey, like it's happening. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I know, man. It's honestly, it's a thing. It's so frustrating too, because I'm 33 and yeah, I mean, I'm in like relatively good shape, but I'm still very aware that like,
yeah,
my body like clicks and cracks when I do certain things. And
It's super annoying. What's exciting though, man? Helena turned 28 last weekend, and she just got a really cool word from the Lord that has been just exactly what she needed in this season with everything we've gone through with changes and everything. So that's really brought a comfort to my soul as husband and leader of our family. So praise him, God, for that.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, I know we don't have to get into the details, but you and I have been talking separately about it. It's fun to like, fun's probably not the right word, but I really like get joy out of seeing lies get exposed and, you know, walking in that truth. It's really powerful. And I think one thing that sometimes people forget is, you know, you and I are doing this just as much as anybody else is. And granted, there's a lot of sobriety, a lot of freedom between the two of us. You know, whatever it is, 15 plus years.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, whether it's us or our wives or whatever, there's still lots of work to be done. Sean, how much have you traveled with your kids? Cause I guess obviously you moved overseas. Well, you haven't traveled at all with Lydia, I'm guessing, but
yeah, not with
did
Lydia.
You travel much with Violet?
Yeah. So Violet, we flew to British Columbia for Christmas, and en route to British Columbia, we got stuck in Calgary for 3 days because of all the winter storms in Canada that one Christmas. So that was, she was about 18 months when that happened. So we were, it was very interesting. 18 months is a very challenging time of a moving child, active. And then we flew to the Czech Republic as well for 6 weeks when Violet was 5 months. So yeah, she's quite the traveler. Yeah.
That's impressive, man. Yeah, we just did this crazy round of traveling. Like, we came back from Jamaica, and then we were here in Canada for like 6 days, and then we got back on a plane. We actually went to Calgary first, and then Edmonton. I spoke at an event.
Yeah,
and it's just crazy. I was like feeling a little bit jealous of my own kid because I didn't get on a plane until I was 12 years old. I think that was my first time flying, and I'm like, man, this guy's kind of got it made.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I mean, he's not as active as like an 18 year old. So that was nice. Or 18 month old rather.
Yeah.
So that was nice, but, it's still kind of crazy. And then like his sleep schedule got all thrown off. Cause we went back 2 hours to Alberta, and then the day that we came back home, we were only in Alberta just long enough for him to get used to it. And then we get back on a plane, we go back 2 hours forward, and then it was daylight savings that day. We went forward 3 hours. So like this poor kid doesn't know what's what, but he's actually done great, but it's just like, I don't know. I'm still wrapping my head around just how much more complicated your life is once you have a baby, you know, it's crazy.
There's so many beauties and so many challenges. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So Shaloma and I are getting ready to start doing some sleep training.
Yeah.
So pray for us if you're listening. We're both like, we're doing it very excitedly and equally afraid. And I had no idea because the environment that I grew up in, or not grew up in, but like in my 20s, the people that I was surrounded by all did sleep training. And they followed a book called Baby Wise, which is a very medical and I would say a little bit more mechanical approach to sleep training, but they all raved about it and they loved it. And so we started reading or listening to Baby Wise. We didn't love it, especially because we felt like it kind of ignored the attachment part of child rearing.
It's like the Gerber method or something.
I'm not familiar with Gerber method, but it's probably the same thing. It's just very clinical. It's like the baby feeds every 3 hours. You can condition them to do whatever you want them to do. And, you know, obviously that's like, that really is the premise of sleep training.
Yeah.
But it just like, there was just not, when we looked at like how frequently they were having the parents come in and stuff like that, it just felt very cold.
Yeah.
So we just weren't huge fans of it. Especially, you know, with what you and I know about attachment, like you have to obviously consider those things.
Yeah.
So we found somebody that we're following, that we really like, and she's very, she's well researched, but then very conscious of attachment. But still pro sleep training. But I just had no idea how many people are anti sleep training, and how many people think it's like child abuse and stuff like that.
I know,
so we've just got to some, like, we're not actually, I don't know. I mean, I guess by the time this episode comes out, we'll probably already be past it, which is fine. Because we're actually not telling a lot of people that we're sleeping for that reason now. Because we're like, oh, you know, just too many intense conversations and being accused of being child abusers over it. So did you guys sleep train? Did you sleep train violently?
Yeah, we did, man. Yeah, there's a great company out of Australia called Little Ones that was tremendously helpful and very much like the therapeutic approach to it, with looking at attachment and the psychology rather than just, you know, treating them like a robot. So I could see where people have a decent argument, but the word sleep training, like we talked about at one point, like, you know, gentle parenting is just language. It doesn't really make sense to people anymore. There's different meanings for it, and but it was a huge catalyst to what we believe, leading our child into forming a sleep habit.
And it's, you know, I think the person we're following, her name's Kara. She's very popular on Instagram, taking care of babies.
That's good.
And her whole thing is like, sleep is a skill, and like any skill, you know, a child's not going to naturally learn it. You have to teach it to them. And teaching them the skill of sleeping is very difficult because no kid actually wants to sleep. And it can be really frustrating when you're, you know, the first, Judah's just over 5 months. So, you know, he's able to like fall asleep on his own. We can put him in the crib sometimes, but he's definitely gotten used to like being rocked to sleep and that kind of stuff. So it'll be a big adjustment for him, you know? And, it's going to be interesting. So we'll see what happens.
And it's such a, it's like, I'm constantly having these sorts of conversations with my clients of like, regulating your emotions is a skill that you were never taught, and you're relying on your parents when you're young to do that. And if they never taught you how to do that, you need to learn it at some point. And the only option is compassion that you never learned it. So it's such a parallel to so many of the conversations I have daily with guys about their attachment and what they decided to latch onto for comfort, which wasn't actually healthy, but it did the trick when they were young, but now it's an addiction. So it's such a parallel.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Shaloma and I have been talking a little bit lately about co-regulation because she is a big co-regulator. Like when she's stressed, she wants to talk to me. She wants to process it.
Yeah.
And I'm actually like, I mean, again, I have a value for co-regulating. I don't want to sound cold or harsh about it. But generally, like the way I learned to cope growing up was I just figured it out on my own. So like I've almost had to learn to co-regulate, whereas I think, you know, Shaloma's probably a little bit more on the other side of like having to scale that back a bit and learning to do it on her own. So it's, I mean, again, I'm basically describing like anxious attachment versus avoidant attachment, right? It's kind of the same dynamic. But yeah, I've just never thought about it more now with Judah, because it's like, even Shaloma and I are just, it affects our parenting philosophy, because there's certain things where I'm like, oh, he'll figure it out. You know, like he's like trying to grab his toy, and I don't mind seeing him struggle because I want him to learn how to grab his toy. And Shaloma wants to just, you know, take it and put it right in his hand. And, you know, it's like, it's just funny how it manifests in little ways. Like attachment is just, Yeah. It's everywhere, you know?
Yeah. 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 Lots of different perspectives. And I think so much of it does come down to how we were raised. And sometimes it's a challenging thing because people want to lock on to their experiences rather than the holistic look at spiritual, physical, emotional. And that's usually where the arguments are just void of a being a good argument. And it's a challenging thing nowadays. People get offended very easy. And man, oh man. In Canada, especially, friendships break up really easy.
It's crazy. There was a stat. I guess it was 2023. This must have came out, but there were like 5 million breakups in Canada during the pandemic. Now, granted, obviously, that goes beyond just the scope of what we were discussing.
Yeah,
but Canada has become very much like very strong cancel culture, I guess.
Yeah.
And absolutely. It's kind of wild. But I read through it a couple of times because I was like, wait, was it 5 million breakups or were 5 million people affected by breakups?
Yeah.
But the stat there was 5 million breakups. Hmm. And that's just kind of crazy. Now, granted, you probably had a bunch of serial online daters who did like one virtual date and then they broke up, right? So I'm sure there's things that are skewing the stats a bit. But,
that's right.
But Canada's only like 40 million people. So 5 yeah. million breakups is that's. 25% of the population affected by it, you know?
That's right, crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't imagine looking at you with a mask on my whole life.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like what I'm seeing here for the top half, so I don't want to see the bottom half of that face. This is over. Yeah.
It's a Canadian mindset right there. And I'm Canadian, man. So I can joke about it.
So in the check, because I know you've been to some medical facilities, are they wearing masks in medical facilities at all?
No. So Czech's an interesting place. I think depending where you go, like if you go to the bigger cities, you're going to get more like westernized. But we came here during COVID in 2021 from Canada, having those like prison cells you had to come back to and quarantine in. And came to the Czech, flew into Prague Airport. They didn't even care about our vaccination status. If we had COVID testing done, we hopped on the train in Prague. And the people who were working were wearing masks, but we didn't, and they didn't say a word. Like we're in the top city of the country on the train for 4 hours, no masks on. We just came from Canada, which is like, if you fart without a mask on, you're going to jail. So it was just surreal, man. Like obviously they had some different things here that we probably missed, but it was just a different world when we came in 2021. So I don't even think COVID's a conversation for people anymore. It's just a different world because of all the distrust with government here. You get a lot of people saying like, oh, that's what the government wants. And that's absolutely not what I'm doing.
Yeah. I love it so much. I've like learned to embrace it because Jamaica's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like they did, because there's so much corruption in these countries, right? And I mean, there's tons of corruption in Canada. Let's not kid ourselves. It's just that it's masked better.
That's right.
And so very sophisticated. Pun not intended. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think it's, it's just interesting. But I had a similar experience because I went to Texas. I'm trying to get Texas. My dates screwed on straight, but it was probably end of 2021. And this is like, actually, it was end of 2021 because we had just moved to Jamaica just as Ontario had started the vaccine passport.
Mm, yeah.
Which was you needing to be vaccinated to enter like grocery stores and stuff like that. And not every grocery store did it. So you could still get groceries if you weren't vaccinated. But I mean, still, like, give me a flipping break. So anyway, so that's like the environment we were coming out of. And then I went to Texas and I was in a grocery store, actually. I had to pick up a couple things before I got to my hotel. And everybody was looking at me funny. And like, I'm in like Austin. So I'm like, this is a big city. These guys have seen a brown person before. Like I couldn't figure out what was going on, you know? And then I'm like, oh, I'm the only person wearing a mask. Like I was just in like some like bizarro world where, you know, nobody cared about that stuff. Just kind of the shock, right? It's just like two different worlds, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's really funny. I'll share this really quickly because it ties in and it's a really cool like way that God worked. And I actually didn't share this with you yet, but I was supposed to go on a retreat back in April last year. And I found out 2 days before the trip that I wasn't allowed to go because I wasn't vaccinated. And you know, I just didn't get vaccinated because young, healthy guy. I'm not an anti-vaxxer or anything. I'm not making this a political conversation. But what is interesting,
that's right.
What is interesting though, Sophia, is I wasn't able to go on that trip and I had a travel credit, and that's actually how we ended up meeting for the first time. I don't know if I would be working with Deep Clean if it wasn't for that trip getting canceled and then using that credit to come and see you. So very interesting to see the silver lining, because we had a lot of challenges during COVID and just really sought the Lord, and was thinking about that 2 weeks ago. Like, wow, that is a really cool affirmation that it wasn't like, oh, like getting vaccinated was a bad thing. But like in our case, we just felt really convicted that we're healthy young people and don't need it. And it was just neat to see, like, I don't know if we would be doing this together today if it wasn't for that. And like, that's a big deal to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's classic. Like, God really does work all things together for his good. And the timing of it was really significant, because I remember when that retreat got canceled and you texted me and you're like, hey, I want to use this credit before I move to the Czech.
Yeah.
And so that was, I think at the time it was only a 3 or 4 month window. And I remember seeing that text being like, oh, I'd love to make something happen. But, you know, Shaloma had just gotten pregnant and we kind of felt like we had our hands full. Like, I wasn't very hopeful of it. And then I was talking to one of my business coaches at the time who was like, why aren't you doing one-on-one coaching? And I was like, well, you know, we thought about it, but it's just so much work to add it. And I have more people to manage. And he's like, no. He's like, you're thinking about this all wrong. And he kind of showed me the model. And then then we were off to the races. And it was only probably a month later or two months later that you were at my house. And I was making you ginormous omelets in the morning. And we were going on long walks and chatting through, you know, coaching philosophies. And kind of crazy, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It's one of the interesting things. This happened in Edmonton. When I was speaking at the event, but I met a bunch of people that I've known online for years. Like the one guy, he's probably the other big player in Canada for porn addiction, among Christians in particular. And his name is Matt Klein. He's been on the podcast and whatnot, but he wrote me an email, or maybe I reached out to him when I first started, and he had already been doing it for like a year or two. And he was like, oh man, he's like, you're gonna have a blast, like just enjoy it and whatever. So he was at this event. And he has a podcast that I've been on, and he co-hosted with a guy named Braden. It's spelled Braden, but it's pronounced Braden.
Yeah.
And so both these guys were at the event, and it's just fun meeting people in person. Like, it's funny how that's become like such a exciting moment in our generation, you know, to like meet your virtual friends in person. And these guys are huge too. They're like 6'2", 6'3", big Alberta boys. I'm like looking up to them, like, kind of crazy, but it's just fun. It's really fun.
Yeah. And those are those like faithful moments to say, like, we've been doing this together for how many years, and us meeting is just that like next encouragement in the journey. So like, you and I, we knew each other for 4.5, almost 5 years when we finally connected in person. And it was just like another like mile marker in the journey of integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I didn't even tell you. I completely forgot. Oh, maybe I did tell you, but Andrew Thompson was at this event.
Did we talk about it? Yeah. Yeah. That's a legendary story that maybe we save for another time.
Yeah. We'll save that for another time. But yeah, it was a lot of full circle moments being at that event and meeting people in person. And yeah, it's crazy. It's a cool world we live in, and it gets me excited. Like, we're talking here about doing some things that are a bit more in person, eventually, nothing immediate. But I'm pretty excited because we have such a phenomenal audience. Our client base is amazing. We have the best clients in the world, I'm convinced. You can't change my mind. And, you know, the idea of meeting some of these guys in person and just the things that God does when we are together in the same room, it's exciting. So anyways, it's fun times. You got anything else you want to mention there? Otherwise, I'm ready to answer some questions here.
Yeah, let's do some questions, man. I'm excited for
Alrighty.
It.
Alrighty. Oscar. Take it away.
Let's go. So the first question is from John in Ontario, Canada. And his question is, I've been dealing with pornography addiction since I was 10 years old, and I'm now 21. I've had moments, weeks and months of victory over the years, but then it crashes with a binge of pornography and masturbation. 4 months ago, I told my elder at church and dad about my struggle with porn, and it led to some very awkward yet rewarding conversations about sin and God's grace. I also joined an accountability group, and 6 months ago, I also started dating, and I love this girl. I feel terrible, disgusted, and ashamed that I'm dealing with this while being in a serious relationship. I am writing this and I still feel hopeless about victory over pornography, masturbation, and lust. I struggle with putting porn away. I thought by having a girlfriend, having accountability, and talking to trusted Christians would put me closer to victory, but I feel overwhelmed. I frequently struggle with lustful thoughts about what I've viewed in the past and for others around me. And in the last 6 months, I've viewed and acted upon porn 6 times. There have been times of great joy where I've felt free from the struggle and times where I question if I am a Christian and worthy of having a girlfriend. So how do I deal with my struggle with pornography in my dating relationship?
Yeah, wow. John, thanks for the question, man. Some really good detail in there. And you're from Ontario, Canada, so you automatically have a good place in my heart. This is a really important question you're asking. I think on the podcast, even we've talked about this quite a bit. In a perfect world, you're clean and you're free before you enter a dating relationship. I think that's the ideal, but it doesn't always work out that way. And you know, your situation is a really good example. And what if a girl came up to me and said, "Hey, I'm interested in a guy, but he struggles with porn. You know, should I be with him? Should I not?" It's very rare that I say, "Don't date the guy." Usually what I ask around for and try to find out is this guy making progress and does he understand what's required for him to get fully free? And if the answer is yes to both those questions, usually it's fine to be in a relationship. So if I'm reading this right, you know, you've been dealing with this for 11 years, it looks like. You've had moments over the years, but you're in kind of the binge purge cycle. And now it's 6 slips in the last 6 months. So it sounds like you have it to about monthly. So I'm seeing some pretty good signs of progress based on the information you've given us. And again, that's the first thing that I want to just encourage you with is it looks like things are trending in the right direction. And with the kind of unworthiness of being in a relationship and all that stuff, I hope that maybe that'll give you a different perspective. I think you're actually... It looks like you're dating material, man. Like, I think this is okay. The second thing I would say is you've got the accountability group, which is great. You know, you did some really good things to get the ball rolling. And I think your progress speaks for itself. You know, you opened up to an elder, you talked to your dad, the accountability group is great. What's missing in this equation, based on what I can see, is a little bit more conscientiousness towards the roots. And a bit more concentrated effort. And that's very typical of people who are able to kind of push things forward, doing some of the traditional solutions, if I can put it that way. Those solutions are great. I think to probably get where you want to go, which is that you're not watching at all and that you're walking in integrity in your relationship with this girl that you really care about, you're going to have to get a little bit more underneath the surface. And I'm sure Sean will have some things to add in that arena. So I think those would be the main things I would encourage you with. And then one more thing I'll add before Sean comments is I don't know what the conversation has been like with your girlfriend, if any, but that's probably the other piece that really needs to happen here, because one of two things is gonna happen. Either your girlfriend's gonna hear about it and it's gonna be really difficult for her, and it could affect whether or not she feels confident being in the relationship. And that may sound like a bad thing, but I can assure you, if that's how she responds, it's better you have that conversation now, then things get more serious, it goes further down the road, and then later she finds out that you were kind of holding this from her. So that's the first thing I would say. The second option, obviously, is that she responds with a lot of grace and she understands and she says, "That's totally okay, I still want to be with you," which, by the way, a majority of women will respond to when you choose to be honest. It's different if you get caught. And so I would say, if she responds that way, I think that'll help reframe your perspective as well. Either way, you're doing the best thing for the relationship. So hopefully that part helps. But I would say those are the three things I'm the most conscious of. Sean, what are you observing here? What would you say?
Yeah, so I can share from my own experience. I brought porn into dating with Helena and marriage with Helena. And when you say like you feel overwhelmed, I can really empathize with that, John. I'll never forget getting engaged to Helena and feeling this immense pressure on my shoulders to try and quit porn, but having no idea how to. That feeling is actually very severe. It's very challenging. One of the things that Helena would continually say is that she saw in me a willing spirit. So kind of piggybacking off of what Sophia said, like the word willingness is a really important word to Helena and I. Even we used to do this work together. She would work with the betrayed partner, or we would do couples coaching. That's a very important word. It seems like you are willing. I think that's vital. When you look into a relationship, there's the dynamic of two people. One of the things, if you have told her, this could be the next step. If you haven't told her, you know, you got to tell her, go through that, and then that could be the next step. But you want to get to a place where you can have a level of safety together, where you feel safe to converse on the things that need to be conversed on. So my wife Helena would have women, the partner of a married man or engaged or dating, doesn't matter, do what is called a 24-hour policy. And basically the female partner would create a list of usually 4, 5, 6 things that if this thing is done, without me knowing, I need you to tell me within 24 hours. And it creates a lot of safety for the partner. It's if you're edging with, you know, watching YouTube for more than 2 hours, because I know that's a slippery slope, I want to know about that. If you are on Instagram for X amount of time, or you start to go on the explore button, I want to know about that stuff. And that's really important, because you're getting it from her mouth to say, what does she want to know? A lot of times guys are left to assume, what should I tell my girlfriend? What should I tell my wife? And they end up just feeling afraid, and they don't actually tell much at all. And then they start overthinking, like, do I have to tell her about every thought I have and everything I'm thinking? And that's just not a fun place to be. That's actually very overwhelming. So in regards to where you're at, I think, the next step is either to have a conversation or to deepen the conversation. And then I think one of the things that I would say really important is, you know, you said sometimes there's times you question if you're a Christian or worthy to have a girlfriend. Those are really important things where we definitely want to get to the roots of, like, what would make you believe that? Where did that form? Who contributed to that belief? Because when we start to question our salvation, we start to question if Christ loves us, there's some glaring things to look at there of who told you that? You know, when Adam and Eve put fig leaves on and hid from God, God's first question to them, his first words out of his mouth were, who told you that? Well, where are you? But then he said, who told you that? And that's a huge part of healing is who, when, where, why. We got to ask those questions. We begin to understand that the struggles we're having have a beginning, and we can begin to have compassion towards ourselves for probably a child who started to believe something that's really not true, how painful and sad that is. And then we can begin to work on what would it look like to speak truth into that area where lies came in, but this is actually what's true, and we can act from our adult, rational, mature mind rather than from an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old. So lots more to be said about that, but that would be like my, you know, 101 answer to that question.
Yeah. And I'll just add, John, the fact that you're asking this question really does prove your salvation. So, you know, because you care. You clearly care about your walk with God. You care about your faith. And just the mere fact you're asking this, like hopefully that'll eliminate some of the doubts about your Christianity. You're good, man. You know, we're all working on things. No one's perfect. And like I said, things are going in the right direction here. So yeah, that is like such a moot point. You're good on that front. And the mere fact you asked about it, I think proves it. So well done. And hopefully some of these things help a bit.
Question number 2 is from Ryder in British Columbia, Canada. I'm turning 18 very soon, and I want to be completely free from sexual sin in my 18th year. My progress has stagnated over the few months, not better or worse. One issue I keep running into is I'm not sure how to get to the roots of my addiction. I use porn maybe once or twice a week, but I couldn't say with certainty why I use it. This bothers me because I want to know what the underlying lies or beliefs are so I can take steps to uproot them. What is the process of identifying and uprooting the belief system underlying my usage of porn?
Wow. What an impressive question. I mean, geez, a guy's 18 years old asking something like this. So for starters, you know, Ryder, well done, man. That is just amazing. Getting to the roots is not, you know, I wish there was just like a simple formula to follow and you could just follow it and you're good to go. It's not necessarily that simple. However, I can give you a question that you can ask that should at least get you started. And then I would say usually the answers that you get from this question fall into one of three buckets, which for us, they're the three pillars of our recovery process, which is cultivating self-awareness and that kind of emotional fitness piece. So building that understanding of your inner life, transformation of the heart. And so that's where we talk about, you know, inner child work, trauma work, parent child dynamics growing up, all those kinds of things, and, you know, healing through those, processing things that haven't been fully integrated. And then the third is shifting your identity. And this is where belief systems and thought life and all of those things start to kind of come into play. And that's sort of the clinching piece that seals the recovery process. So usually when we're talking about roots, we're talking about maybe a lack of emotional awareness and a skill that needs to get built there. We're talking about trauma and wounds from the past, or we're talking about faulty thinking and destructive belief systems. So those are the three broad categories. But usually the question I like to ask in this case, when someone's saying, you know, I want to get to the roots, I know there's more. My question typically is, what is porn offering you? And that usually gets the ball rolling, and at least kind of gives you some ideas on where you might need to start. Now, given your age, I would say you are at a prime place to really get some professional help. And I know that may sound a little bit almost counterintuitive because you're doing so great at such a young age already. But the one thing that people don't realize, they think that, you know, you hire a coach, you do a program like ours, or you go see a therapist because you want to fix the problem. But the real value of this journey, in my opinion, is the character and the skill development that takes place. Because this is why Sean and I are so passionate about inner child work, is because it's one of those modalities that we can teach our clients how to do it, and then they can do it the rest of their lives. Yeah. So we're not just giving them an experience, we're giving them a skill that lasts well beyond their relationship with us, because we don't want to work with our clients forever, right? We actually want to work with our clients relatively quickly so that they don't need us anymore. And so I would encourage you, like, this is actually a great opportunity, not just for you to get this problem dealt with so that you can enjoy your adult life a clean man. That's certainly priority number one. But the way you want to do it is actually by building the skills and cultivating the character that's necessary to sustain that all along, not just to get free and to say, I did it, but to actually sustain it so that when you're 98 years old and you're on your deathbed, you're still walking in that freedom because you had these skills and you had that character. So that, I think that that would be the best move you could do at this point. But I don't know, Sean, is there other things that he can maybe do to start tackling the roots on his own?
Yeah, well, Ryder, I'm from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, near Vancouver. When I moved to Halifax, I was living in Coquitlam, so I don't know where you're at, but it's always good to, you know, Sophia likes the Ontario guys. It's good to see some from BC, so that's cool. I'm going to say something that's a little bit more unique. Usually when I ask guys this question, it's a bit awkward, but it's very important. It's what themes of pornography are attractive to you? That's going to give so much insight into the longings of your heart, the beliefs you have about yourself and other people. So for example, Jay Stringer, one of my favorite books, Unwanted, he did research on like 3,000 people on the types of porn they watch, the struggle they have in their life, futility, deprivation, etc. And there was two main findings that I usually talk about solely, and then they can branch out further. But the two main themes you see a lot is an older woman pursuing a younger man. Typically, there's a longing to be pursued, a longing to be seen, a longing to be wanted and special. That's, I think, Sophia, you had a podcast recently about how that, you know, MILF pornography is one of the top searches. It's because we're all longing for that a lot. And then there's this other side where usually there's a aggressive or dominant man with a petite younger woman. So you kind of see these parallels where if you come from a home that's disengaged, where maybe it was unemotional, or there was dismissiveness, neglect, you're going to long for that pursuit of someone who's an authority to see you and want you. If you grew up in a household that was rigid and strict and rules-based, it's likely that you're going to grow up and have a sense that you want to kind of dominate other people. Maybe like in real life, you're not going to, but in the fantasy world, that's usually what happens. We live out these ideals of what didn't happen to us, we get it in our fantasy, or what did happen to us, we reverse it in our fantasy. So if you want to learn a lot about like the lies behind entitlement, fear of failure, you know, shame, things like that, I think actually looking at the types of porn you're watching would give you a lot of insight. Mm-hmm. And like man, yeah, at 18 years old, there's such an incredible opportunity to really have a freedom that, man, you can enter your 20s free. That's not a common theme. You can have, yeah, you know, 18 years at freedom. That's incredible. So really excited for you, Ryder. And I really hope that you can explore those themes and storylines in what is arousing to you. There's no shame in it. It's arousing because it's telling you something about the longings of your heart.
Yeah. Yeah. And if the content you're watching, you're having a hard time identifying themes, Sean kind of alluded to it, but I want to highlight it. You can also pay attention to your fantasies. Where do your fantasies go? Because again, like, we tend to use our imagination to compensate for our unmet needs. And so that's another kind of hack there to figure out what's going on, and hopefully gives you some more data. So thank you guys so much for listening. Again, if you have questions yourself, you can submit those using the link below. In the meantime, please share this content with anyone that you think might value from it. God bless you guys. We'll talk soon. Hey man, it's Sathya again. I wanted to let you know really quick about a resource that I made just for listeners of this podcast. It's called The Last Relapse. It's actually a book that details my entire recovery process all the way from the beginning to the very end. If you are looking for a system, you want to understand what it is that we're talking about here when we talk about getting to the roots, what it looks like, you want practical tips and tools, this book is for you, and you can get it for free at thelastrelapsebook.com. That's my gift to you. And to sweeten the deal a little bit, you should know that this book also comes with a copy of a free workbook. So you can actually take all the stuff that you learned to the next level and stack the odds in your favor of making a full recovery through this resource. Thousands of people have got their hands on this. Their lives have been changed, and I'd love to see you do the same. Go to thelastrelapsebook.com and get your copy now. And look, if you're more of a physical book kind of guy, you can buy the book anywhere online where books are sold. All the money that we make from those books goes to a charity in Uganda. We make no money off of it. It is literally just our gift to the world to make the world a better place and to help men like you quit pornography. Get your copy now at thelastrelapsebook.com. And thank you so much for listening.